Welcome to episode 56 of the Irish Photography Podcast, where we're talking about new revealings for Sigma and back button focus.
I don't know who you are, but welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. Sit back, relax, and listen about cameras, gear, settings, stories, and all things photography. Join Dermot and Darren on Ireland's Best Photography Podcast. Let's go.
And you're very welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. And today we are joined, as always, by my good old buddy, Darren J. Spoonley. How are you, pal?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm absolutely fantastic. I've had an absolute brilliant week. Very, very busy. But yeah, weddings are coming in quite fast. So that's a good complaint for me. And last week's podcast with Nick Page was just absolutely fantastic. I had so much fun with Nick. So tell me about your week. How are things for you?
Things are good, man. Things are good, yeah. I'm enjoying, I suppose, listening back as well to Nick's episode. I really enjoyed it. I think he was a great guest and, you know, very easygoing as well. So I think we're both at ease with him, and he gave a great insight into his life as a, as you say, you know, quote unquote professional photographer. And I liked the down to earthness of Nick. I think he was quite a charismatic person as well to talk to. So overall, I think, yeah, I really enjoyed it. What do you think of it, man? Yeah, you say you enjoyed it. I hope our audience enjoyed it as much as I did, yeah. But what about you?
Yeah, I really did enjoy it. I was a bit starstruck, to be honest, yeah, at times, because like Nick is such a big iconic profile in the photographic industry, you know. So I was just, I was nervous. I was just like, man, I can't believe I'm actually talking to Nick Page. This is fantastic. Like we rewind back to last summer and where the podcast was only an idea, and we were watching Nick Page hoping someday that we'd get to meet him, like, mm-hmm. And yes, you know, fast forward a couple of months later, he's actually talking to us on our podcast, and he watches our YouTube channels every once and again, like. So this is absolutely amazing, and I almost like he said himself, he had to pinch himself to make sure it's real, and you said it on the podcast as well, and like, yeah, this is amazing. I was absolutely delighted.
Yeah, I think the whole episode, to be honest with you, was kind of like, yeah, if Carlsberg did episodes, you know, that would be one of them. I mean, it was great to be able to get Nick on. Like I said, I'm delighted he agreed to come on, and he gave a great podcast as well for our listeners. So yeah, I think it was really, really good. And I think, you know, our listeners really enjoyed it too, yeah. And other than that, really, I suppose I've been getting ready to talk about this evening, because, you know, you were mentioning during the week there that there could be some news, and then we read some interesting news there as well earlier. So what's the first thing we're going to talk about today?
Well, before we get into that, Darren, I've some news for us, right? Oh? It's not us, it's for you.
Oh, yeah?
I'd want to say congratulations on getting your 1,000 subscribers. I think it's absolute fantastic feat. And no, I'm deadly serious. I'm absolutely delighted for you. I couldn't be happier for you, man. I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's not something that you were shooting for all the time, but when you got closer and closer, I could see your demeanor, you know, and you wanted it, you were pushing for it then, you know, just to get over the finish line. And when you did, I think there was a sigh of relief on you to say, look, I've finally done it. So I'm absolutely delighted for you. Well done, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Cheers. Look, you know what? It was actually interesting because I hit 1,000 subs the weekend. We went down and met the lads from the Full Irish, so I was out taking photos when I hit it. But yeah, okay, I didn't really make the YouTube channel to make 1,000 subs. But you know what I actually did was, it seems to be customary now, I think, to kind of do it on YouTube. So I kind of had to make a video to celebrate my 1,000 subs, I suppose, really.
Oh, yeah? But
yeah, it's, you know what, it's a great achievement. It's a great achievement, I suppose, overall. And, you know, from a YouTube point of view, yeah, onwards and upwards. The next one I make now, like I said in the video, is when I reach 10,000. So, yeah, like and subscribe.
10,000. Do you know what? I think you'll get to 10,000 faster than you think. Do you know? I think, like, the first 1,000 is going to be hard because you're relatively unknown to this industry in a way up until your first 1,000, and then a lot more people start, well, YouTube start pushing you out a bit more, I'm guessing. It's in their interest for them to push you out. So I think the rest of the subscribers to 5,000 will come a lot faster than you think.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it, you'd think that, and I suppose when I was getting close to it, as you said, I kind of got a small bit excited because a few of the other guys that I would know that also have YouTube channels had recently got to it, and, you know, I was like, okay, yeah, it'd be interesting to get there and such like that. But no, like, I mean, you can, YouTube will only push your videos out once you're making the money, and even at 1,000 subscribers where they say, okay, you can monetize your account, you still have to have 4,000 hours of viewing in the last 365 days, so... You know, I still have a fair bit of viewing to go, like, so yeah, you know what, it's an interesting, I suppose, thing about making the videos, and the achievement, and the milestone is there to reach the 1,000, so yeah, I made the video for a bit of a, I have to kind of make the video, I suppose, really, don't I, but yeah, it was kind of good to then look back on how the YouTube thing would have evolved, really, but primarily it's still all about the photography for me, you know.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more. So we're going to push on so to our first subject, but before we do, currently how many subscribers do you have on the 8th of July 2019?
Oh, hang on, I have 1080.
Okay, we're going to have to keep tracking this now to see how fast you get to 5,000.
Oh, you reckon?
Oh, I reckon. Okay. 100%.
Okay,
all right, so we're going to jump on to our first piece of business, guys, and I know I said a few months back that we only want facts on the Irish Photography Podcast, but yeah, look, I think this is something that we can really reveal to the world. It's up in Petapixel, so thank you very much to Petapixel for the information. So I'll read a news report first, Aaron, and we can maybe have a few words about this article.
Okay.
So a Sigma to reveal a 35mm 1.2 aperture lens and a 45mm f2.8, 14-24 2.8. So as they head into the weekend, Sigma has decided to sort of confirm an exciting leak that they shared during the week. So those lenses I just talked about, they're going to try and release them. And they're designed specifically for full-frame mirrorless cameras and will be announced mid-July. Oh. I reckon maybe next week.
Wow, okay.
So the confirmation comes in the form of a teaser on an image that you can see in Petapixel. What I'll do is I'll get a link and I'll put it up on the Facebook page so everyone can see it on the Friday when this pod gets released. That will translate to that announcement is coming on the 11th of July. Oh, Jesus, yeah. So it's in 3 days' time, actually. So it's probably by the time this podcast posts, it might be out by then.
Oh.
And it's going to be out at 4 p.m. Beijing time. And that will translate to, what time is 4 p.m. Beijing to Irish time? Is it about 12 hours in the difference?
12 hours, I'd say. Yeah, 11 hours. I don't
know. But anyway, according to Sony Alpha Rumors, this is when Sigma will be making at least 3 of the 4 new lenses public. What's more, is Sony Alpha Rumors sources indicate that the lenses will not be exclusive to Sony FE mount. The L-mount versions will be released alongside Sony mount lenses, and Sigma is planning to release these lenses for Nikon Z-mount and Canon RF-mount as well. The rumor site is reporting that Sony E-mount, Panasonic, Leica L-mount versions will be announced on July 11th, with Nikon Z, Canon RF-mount versions announced later. And no, there will not be a DSLR version of these lenses at all.
Huh.
They were designed exclusively for the full-frame mirrorless. Finally, Sony Alpha Rumors also received some additional information about upcoming 35mm 1.2 lens, as you may have expected given its extremely fast aperture. The lens will allegedly boast premium construction, record low aberrations, the best MTF performance of any full-frame 1.2 lens, and an ultra-fast silent autofocus. With the announcement less than a week away now, we can't wait to find out what Sigma actually makes public on July 11th. If the rumors hold up, 3 of the 4 lenses will be available for pre-order on announcement day, with the 24-70 2.8 expected later this year. Thank you very much to Petapixel for that report. Darren, what say you?
That is amazing.
What's the most amazing part about it to you?
The fact that they're now going to be creating lenses designed specifically for the next generation of cameras and not making them for the DSLR. So now the evolution of the lens is following with the cameras, and Nikon, Nikon and Canon have said that they are going to look at in regards to their future to be in the mirrorless aspect, and that's the whole framework that it's being built on. So the lens company is obviously following that. But what I find amazing in regards to it is the quality of the Sigma lenses. When you get them onto the mirrorless bodies, I mean, it's just going to be absolutely incredible.
I agree. I mean, I can't see anything bad about this in any way, shape or form. Now, the DSLR, okay, is it a dinosaur? No, it's not a dinosaur. There's going to be people still who are going to use DSLR cameras, and quite rightly so, because they are absolutely fantastic. You look at the Canon 5D Mark IVs, Canon 5D Mark IIIs, Nikon D850s, Nikon D750s. They're all fantastic cameras, and it will be a long, long, long time before they're considered not able for this market. So I wouldn't be worried in any way, shape or form from that side of it. But I just am very, very surprised at the fact they are only making these available for mirrorless cameras. And I'm curious as to why. One way I can kind of think of why is the flange on these new mirrorless cameras. Now, I know Sony's flange is slightly smaller than the new Canon RF and the Nikon Z mount, which have quite a large a bayonet, a kind of opening at the start of the after the sensor. So maybe that has something to do with that, you can get that light onto the sensor faster. But if you had a mirror in the way, then you mightn't be able to, might cause some complication in some way, shape or form. Do you think that might be the same to you?
I think in regards to the way that they're doing the lenses now and the quality of what they're doing and where they're looking for them to go with, of course you're going to have people that are going to always use the DSLRs for many, many reasons. But if you look at why Sigma have moved in this way, look at what the range of lenses they have out there at the moment for DSLRs. I mean, some would say that they are close to, okay, not perfection, but extremely good quality lenses and cover quite a huge range at an optical integrity, which is incredible. So, you know, what more can you do in the DSLR market, really, than look to where the market is going to go? So I think they're going to cater for both, but number one, mainly in what they've already got out there, because the new ranges of Sigma lenses that they've just brought out are incredible. So, you know, if you look at what they've done there now in that latest batch, and now to bring that over onto mirrorless, I think it's going to be exceptional. So I think that's possibly why they've announced that.
Yeah, like there already is a 24 to 72.8 lens available for DSLR cameras, so you have one,
yes,
already yourself. So, and you quite like that. I think it's quite a rather good lens, you know. But what I'm a bit baffled by is the fact that, okay, I have 35mm lens myself, a Sigma Art one, and it's one of the, I think it's the very first art lens that they ever brought out, and that's a 1.4 aperture.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're bringing out this new Sigma Art 35mm 1.2, which is an even wider, again, is very, very fast lens, mm-hmm, a very unforgiving. But why don't they just bring that 35mm lens out for DSLR? That's where I just don't understand why they'll only make them for mirrorless cameras and not DSLR. I can't get my head around it, you know.
Well, maybe as you said there, I suppose in regards to where the lens would mount to the camera, it makes a significant difference. I don't know, because all I can say is when I used the Zeiss recently at 1.4, the focal plane on that was like microscopic. So if you were to bring that again to 1.2, you're like, what are you going to be focusing on that you want to have focused within that plane of focus, you know?
Well, as a wedding photographer, if I had 1.2, I'm going to be shooting a 1.2 nearly all the time.
But you won't get the whole face in focus if you focus on the eye even with that, will you?
You can. There's ways around it. So basically, if I have a subject matter that is, the whole face is going to be thrown out if I'm close to the face. But if I move back and I take a photograph, then more of her face is going to be in focus.
Yes.
There's ways around this, especially for portraiture. So like if I'm shooting a bride, and you better believe I'm going to be at 1.2 if I have a 1.2 lens. And if I don't shoot a 1.2, it's going to be 1.4, 1.8 at the maximum. I'm not going to be shooting anywhere above that, because I need as much light as I can, and I need as a fast shutter as I can, because well, as a wedding photographer, you need to be able to go boom, boom, boom as fast as you can. There's like, there's no room for error. You need as much light as you can because all these churches are dark.
Dark.
There's only one good church in the whole of Limerick, and that's St. John's Cathedral. Every other church is absolutely shocking. So, yeah, wide lenses, you need them. So you need to be shooting at 1.2, 1.4. But that does sound exciting, and it's okay. Something that I would love to get my paws on. But the one thing that I have a bit of a gripe about with Sigmar lenses, like, you know me now, I have, what, 8 Sigmar lenses. I do love them.
Yeah.
But there is one thing that turns me off them all the time, and that is the ridiculously loud autofocus motor in them. So if you're using them for video, you're going to hear all the time when you're on continuous focus. So you have to be manual focus for it to be quiet. And I have a video coming out. It's going to be coming out today, actually, because by the time this podcast was released, it's going to be out at the same time, where I talk about the Zeiss lens. And this is one thing that I talk about in the video. So you're going to see it and all that I actually transfer over to a video of my dog. And you can hear the autofocus motor in it going. But at the end of this report, I'm just going to scroll down now, Darren. Okay. And it says it here that it's going to the best MTF performance of any full frame 1.2 lens and an ultra fast and silent autofocus.
Okay.
So if they can fix that, then Sigma Art will have my heart forever. Forever. Well, ever, ever, ever.
If you're listening there now, Sigma, you know you heard it here first from Dermot O'Donovan. You'll have his heart forever. You already have his heart anyway, because he has pretty much all the different types of lenses of any iteration that there has been, or reiteration of that matter. But yeah, okay, absolutely. I think, yeah, you'll probably fall even more deeper in love with Sigma if they were to fix that item for you. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I mean, yeah. Look, you only want any lens because it's shiny.
Shiny! Yeah. Rule number one.
No, reason number one. There's many reasons for the justification of gas, and I see them all quite a lot when I'm talking to you on this thing, yeah.
I haven't bought anything in weeks, and what you know about.
True story. Amazingly, actually a true story, yeah. Yeah. All right, listen, that was interesting there about the Sigmas. I'm excited for when they're going to come out, and I mean, I'll have to make sure that I'm on a mirrorless. You've already made the jump now, so you're poised and ready, but yeah, you know, it'll be interesting to see where they're going. I'm sure we'll have found out by the time this goes live. So we're either full of shite or we're kind of onto something, but sure, we'll know it by the time our listeners are listening. If we're full of shite, tell us in the Facebook group anyway. Yeah,
will do, will do. And just before we go for break, guys, and if you do want to join the Facebook group, please go on to Facebook and search the Irish Photography Podcast. You'll have one very simple question. All you have to do is answer, who is a host on the Irish Photography Podcast? My name is Dermot. His name is Darren. You can even name some special guests like Bernard Garrity, Nick Page, Michael O'Sullivan, and so on and so forth. And don't forget about our good old buddy, John Myler. Also, we will also accept his name. So the reason we want a name is to exclude all the bots and robots and the spammers. So it's all a nicer group. And we only want listeners in the group that are going to help the community out. So without further ado, we're going to jump on for a quick word from our sponsors, Hainel Industries.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And you're very welcome back to the Irish Photography Podcast. So now we're going to move on to our second topic. I was about to say second segment, but our second topic today, guys. And today we're going to be talking about the pros and cons of back button focus. So, Darren, do you use auto or back button focus?
I don't use back button focus, and it kind of scares me, to be honest with you, because I had a bad experience with back button focus. Oh, I even call it bad button focus.
Bad button focus.
Yeah, I don't really enjoy back button focus, because if you ever get a camera from somebody and they ask you to take pictures and you don't realize that it's on back button focus and you're trying to focus, it's quite frustrating because you can miss So then when you're not used to it as well, I know it becomes muscle memory for normality, but for me, from a landscape point of view, I've got to, primarily it's on a tripod when I'm taking the actual shot. Okay, I'll take other shots beforehand, but I don't need back button focus, I suppose, really. So I wouldn't have used it. So I had an opportunity to take photographs at a friend of mine's kid's birthday. You're going to say, well, you jump and take some pictures. And of course, people think, oh, yeah, you're the photographer. Yeah, here you go. Like, and I'm like, all right, okay. I never used this guy's camera before. And actually, it was a Canon. So thankfully, I had a small bit of understanding of it. If it was a Nikon, like our people on the Facebook page would have pointed out, I'd be completely lost. I wouldn't even know to turn it on. But yeah, if it was, I still couldn't figure it out where it was. So I never really used it. I did try and turn it on my camera to see what it was all about. But I very quickly went back to the half shutter, because that's normally what I use in the landscape point of view. But there are many reasons, I imagine, for using back button focus, and those people that would use it would swear by it and probably screaming at the car radio going, no, you have to use back button focus. Well, yeah, okay. I probably would agree if I was using it that often, but for me, no.
Well, it's funny you say that now, because like you say, if you had a Nikon camera, like the listeners in the group are saying, a camera is a camera, Darren. Whether it's a Canon, Nikon, Sony, or whatever, they all adjust your shutter speed. You all adjust your aperture, and you all adjust your ISO. And once you have the exposure triangle down, a camera is just a camera. It's the way you get there is what makes it easier for you.
Exactly. It's finding it and trying to figure out what the buttons on the spaceship actually mean.
Exactly. So, like, if you get me a Nikon camera, that's fine. I will get by. I'll know how to use it. This button does that, this button does this, and this button does that. That's fine. All you need to know is three things, and everyone else, you'll get by. You'll struggle from time to time until you get used to it, but you'll get by. You'll be fine. It's just a camera, okay? So you need to put your big boy pants on now, and you need to go back button focus for yourself, okay?
Not a chance. Not in that situation. I mean, like I said, I had one opportunity, and by the time I figured out what I was doing, I was like, oh, man, this is missed. Can you all go back in there again, please? never again. I had to do that, believe it or not. True story.
I believe you. But you know, I remember when I first changed to back button focus, I changed at the wrong time. I work as a professional photographer, right? So I had a photo shoot for a 21st birthday party, and I was out in the middle of nowhere. Jesus, where was out towards Abbey Feel or somewhere like that in County Limerick. Or no, wait, I was out in Askeaton. Askeaton. I can't even pronounce it right. Askeaton. So I was doing a photo shoot out there, and a friend of mine said, you should be doing back button focus. What's wrong with you? Like, you're not even human. And I started going, jeez. I didn't want to admit to say I didn't know what back button focus was.
Right.
So I was there going, oh, yeah. I do it all the time. I just don't have it on right now.
Oh, my God.
So I went home and I went, what the hell is back button focus like? So I kind of looked up on Google to see what it was, and I'm like, okay, I can do this. Yeah, wrong time to do it. I went out on a fucking, on a shoot, and the first, I'd say 20 photographs of your one's party, well, the first 20 minutes, I meant to say, were all out of focus, nearly every single one of them. But I didn't realize on the back of the camera, because the LCDs are so crap.
Yes.
But I was there going, okay, these are fine. Yeah, this is okay. And then I realized I'm not pressing the back button for the focus. I was like, oh, no. So I quickly changed back. It was fine. I got away with it. The first few images weren't great anyway, you know, but still, don't ever do this before a job. The one thing you have to do with back button focus, you need to practice at it. Like you said, it's like muscle memory, and it's something that you, like, if you don't practice something enough, then you're not going to be able to do it. So I'd encourage you, if you have time and you have something that's not so important, then try back button focus and try it a bit more and more and more. But like,
why though, right? So like, okay, if I'm pressing the half shutter button, I'm doing the same thing as back button focus. It's the same exact same thing. So if I'm half pressing the button, what difference does it make for me pressing the button at the back for back button focus?
Okay, look, it's easy to get stuck in a rut with photography, right? And the camera technique, if you do feel that you've reached a bit of a plateau in your photography and you're having a particular problem,
it's going to change by changing from the half shutter button to the back button.
Listen. If you're having problems with focusing and moving subjects, this is a good thing for you, right?
Okay, go on.
So it may seem like This technique is very popular with news, sports and wildlife photographers who see it as a faster and more foolproof way of focusing than conventional methods, where you half press the shutter button, like you say, to get focus, and then press it all the way down to take the actual picture. So depending on who you talk to, there are going to be two big advantages in decoupling focusing from the shutter button and assigning it to the AF button on the back of it, or similar to the back of whatever camera you have, so whether it's Nikon or Canon or whatever. So first of all, it's reliable and it's fast. And in the conventional focusing method, every time you half press the shutter button, the camera refocuses and it could end up focusing on the wrong thing. Also with conventional focusing, you have to keep switching between single shot autofocus mode for a static subject and continuous AI servo on a Canon anyway for a moving object.
What's it on Nikon?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't know what it is. I'm sure it's something similar. So with back button focusing, you can keep the back button pressed down to keep tracking on a moving object, or just hit it once to focus on a static object. It's this ease of tracking which explains the popularity of the technique with sports shooters, who obviously spend all their time carefully following fast moving objects. Here's another advantage. With the static back button focus, you only need to set focus once and then recompose. As long as the distance between you and subject stays the same when using shallow depth of field. But there's also some cons to this as well. Like nothing is perfect. So the biggest downside is that the back button focusing can take some time to get used to, and you may miss some shots at the beginning, like we talked about already, while you're getting your head around it. If you forget to release the button when shooting a static object, your camera's autofocus can get seriously confused and it's expecting a moving subject. So again, you might end up fluffing the shot. It's fair to say that the back button focusing is not the best technique for beginners, and it's adding an extra layer of complexity. So once you've cracked the basics of autofocus and autofocus points using conventional shutter button focusing, however, it's well worth a try, and you can always change it back. So it's something that I would encourage you to change it.
Okay, go on. Tell me how to do it.
Okay, so if you go into your camera, I'm just going to turn my one on now. Bear with me. Da, da, da. So you're going to go.
That didn't take you long. Did you have it in your hand or something?
No.
Were you sitting there stroking your camera?
like that cat out of...
Exactly. Or the Bond movies. Yeah. Go on anyway. Yeah, press.
Yeah, that's the one. So before we talk about the Canon one, right? Like, guys, each camera is different.
I want to get to the Nikon one.
You are such an a-hole. So what I want you to do is go into your menu, okay, in your Canon camera.
Yeah.
So like a Canon 80D could be slightly different also. So you need to just check your manual, okay? Men don't read manuals, so you're better off just Googling it, really, to be honest.
True story.
Am I right? I'm right. I know I'm right. So yeah, sorry. I went off on a bit of a tangent there. So you go into your menu, okay? So Canon have a nice little menu system going. So the first one's going to be red. So that's going to be like your image quality, your raw settings and all that. So then you've autofocus, your image things, and then your format cards. And there's an orange menu system. So you're going to see exposure level increments, ISO speed settings, and so on and so forth. So what you need to do is to go into your custom controls on your Canon camera. So on a Canon 5D Mark III, you're going into your orange settings, page 2, and it's right down there at the bottom. So I don't know what it is on a Canon 6D, Darren.
It certainly isn't what you're describing, anyway, that's for sure.
Okay. See, you'll have to Google it, buddy. Or even better yet, you could read your manual. Well, how exciting one, could man. That be?
I haven't got one. I never you got do, one. Nobody ever gets a manual in a box. What are you talking about? It's lies, man. It's lies. There never is a manual in a box. Nobody ever knows where it is.
Yeah, whatever. But once you get into your custom controls, you do find it, okay? There's going to be a bit of a menu system. You're going to have like 10 tabs on the right-hand side and a small picture.
Hang on. Are you looking at the brand new Canon EOS R there, yeah?
No. This is a 5D Mark III that I have in my hand.
Oh, okay. Apologies. Because when I'm looking at this one, I've got 3 red ones, and then I have 3 blue ones, and then I have 4 yellow ones. I've no oranges, And the red ones are camera. The three next, which are blue, are for playback. And then the last four are for settings of the camera.
Go into the settings one there.
Canon. So I'm in the settings type this in now and today. I see select folder, file numbering, auto-rotate, format card. And then I've got next one, auto power off, LCD brightness, LCD on and off, time zone, language, GPS. And video system, feature guide, info button display options. Maybe that's what it is. Hang on. Display camera settings. No, that's not it. And then I'm in sensor cleaning and battery info. No.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Look, here's the... Okay. Have you got your normal screen as if you're about to take a photograph open?
Yeah.
Just go to that. Okay. You know your Q button?
Yeah.
Press that.
Yeah.
Now, is there a symbol of a camera over towards the right-hand side with kind of bullet points at the side of it? It might be above your RAW.
Yeah, there is, yeah. Custom controls.
There you go.
Okay.
That's it.
And then... AF, so select now, the function to assign.
The very first
metering and AF start is on the AF button, yeah?
Yeah, so you go into the very first one, okay? You see this little icon where it's your shutter button. You press that,
yeah,
and it should be AF metering and AF start. You're going to switch it over to metering start only and just press that.
Okay.
And then that has disabled your focus button on the shutter button. And now it's only set to AF on at the back. So now you are a back button focuser.
Okay, all right. I have it on.
You should put that as your
Let's look forward to lots and lots of blurred images coming shortly.
But I think it's a fantastic method to use. Like I said, it is going to take a bit of training, like, you know. And when you hold it down, keep it held down, as you can see on your focus points. You can have a single focus point or you can have a multi-focus point. It's up to yourself.
Yeah.
Darren, you've only got like 9 focus points.
So. I know, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've only got 9 focus points to choose from, so it's not that difficult for me to decide on which one, but I stick it on the middle one there now and press to the right, and it was interesting because I just focused on something and then I took my finger off it, and it, when I moved around, it didn't change the focus, whereas normally I'd half press the shutter button, it would automatically refocus again, yeah. So that was interesting, I think. Yeah. That could be. And I think I remember when I did do some research on it, all right, you know, I kind of jested and saying, all right, that I never use it because I did try, like, but I remember at the time some big guy showing that a video of his kid hitting a baseball towards the camera. I thought, in the first place, when I saw that, that's a bit dangerous. You're in front of the ball, like, but yeah, but he nothing happened anyway, but yeah. But the kid was hitting the ball towards the camera, and the guy was using back button focus, and he was just making sure he had the focus plane done, and then bang, he was just taking off the shot. He didn't have to worry about focus any further. So I could see it would be interesting in that point of view, all right, yeah, if you wanted to have a fixed focus and then be able to explore around. And I suppose I have done that certain times as well. If I want to take a photograph, anyway, I might focus on something off to the distance and then bring the camera over because it gives me that plane of field where there isn't something else or something along those lines, you know.
You're going to hate it at first, Darren, I promise you.
I did.
Okay, you won't like it.
And I still do up as far as now, so we'll see if that changes.
If you give it a good, honest chance, really. You will like it. I didn't like it at first. Genuinely, I absolutely hate it. I was like, what am I doing? But I'd dug a hole into myself saying that I use it all the time to one of my friends. So I had to kind of do it. But but I'm glad I kind of did. If you use this for sports, I guarantee you Nick Page is using it for those Red Bull soccer matches that he's done. I guarantee you wedding shooters like Roberto Venezuela is using it for every wedding he does. I bet you Lara Jade, the best professional portrait photographer in the world, I guarantee you she's using it. I guarantee you Kieran O'Mahony is using it for wildlife. I'd almost put my life in it. I mean, it is revolutionizing. I absolutely love it. I can't ever see myself using a focus on the shutter button ever again in my whole life.
So was it the first thing that you turned off when you got the R?
Absolutely, straight away. And you know what? When I got the Sony A7R Mark II, I thought it was the most complex thing to change on it. It took me weeks to figure it out. Now, I didn't exactly hunt it out to make sure that I could to get it. I was a bit lazy about it because I was still learning about the eye autofocus on the Sony camera.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it a nightmare to figure out how to change the back button focus, and there is a bit of a rigmarole to it. But with the Canon EOS R, the second I got it, straight away, boom, back button focus. I love it, baby. I'm telling you, Darren, you're going to love it.
I probably will love it, like, but I mean, I probably won't use it that often when I'm out in the landscape. Mind you, I suppose, yeah, well, okay, sometimes I'll take focus using autofocus just to get a steer, and then I'll fine-tune after that. But it's just about teaching myself to press the button at the back, I suppose, really. And then I rarely use the shutter anyway, although, mind you, I have been kind of lazy in the recent times. I haven't been using the wireless remote, but I rarely press the shutter button anyway because I normally use the wireless remote. But yeah, I mean, if I can just remember to use that instead and not freak out when I'm pressing the button going, man, what's going on? Are my eyes broken today or something? And that's if I can actually see the screen in the back of the camera, because the camera, the back screen in the back of the camera is brutal and you're trying to look at stuff. Yeah. You know. And actually, I really do miss that of the EOS RP with the screen in the back when you look through the viewfinder, because I was out shooting there recently and the sun was bright and I could barely see the back of the camera and I was looking at the shots and I was kind of having to shade myself over, and of course, like, it's still glare from where you are and the brightness around you and stuff like that, like, you know. So yeah, you have to be in very good conditions to be able to see those right, I suppose, and when you're shooting anything outside of dawn and dusk, it's very hard to kind of see them. So I do miss that actually about the EOS RP.
I feel so sorry for you, buddy.
Yeah, I know.
One thing you mentioned there about the remote trigger, Darren, the Hainel Capture Pro, I saved up and I got one. I loved it. Absolutely love it. I'm delighted you you made me buy it, really. It's all your fault. But anyway, it's fantastic. But there's a caveat.
Oh.
You cannot use back button focus on the camera when using the remote trigger. It won't focus for you. It has to be on the shutter. Oh. And I nearly had a nervous breakdown at first when I got the Hainel Capture Pro. I thought it was broken. I thought there was something wrong with it. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to bring this back to the shop. I was freaking out, Darren, I swear to God. And then I just, for some reason, for no reason at all, it's like, okay, let's just reset everything back to normal, see what happens. And lo and behold, it worked once I resetted the back button focus, and then I changed it back to back button focus and it wouldn't work again. So if you're using a remote trigger, you have to have it on the shutter button. So unfortunately, I just wanted you to make sure of that point in case you have a nervous breakdown like me.
So, okay. So on that point, so if I do switch my camera, which I have done right now, I won't be able to use the shutter. So I'll have to switch it back to the half shutter press.
Correct, for when you're shooting with a remote trigger, and I don't like that about it.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. Maybe there could be a change or something, I don't know. But yeah, that's interesting, actually. Yeah, but
it'd be great.
I think, you know, from taking the photo and in that different way, it's about teaching myself. So I'll give it a go. I'll do it for you, boy. I'll give it a go. And if I end up screaming, you know why.
Much love. Right. Okay, let's take a bit of a break, buddy. And we're going to hear from our sponsors, Hainel Industries.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And you're welcome back to the Irish Photography Podcast. Okay, we're at the final part of the podcast tonight, guys. And we are coming back with our VSP, which has been absent. Well, Nick Page had one last week, so he had
weren't
his
they
funky
excellent?
Socks.
Weren't they excellent as a VSP? I'm actually, I had to go find the link for it. And I was looking around. He was right, you know, some people might find it hard to be able to find them. So I did a bit of digging. The only place I found them was the link that I put up in the group. But man, they look absolutely incredible. And even from a travelling point of view, I'm not going to bring wellies. I mean, I was looking there at pictures of people who have gone to Iceland and they've got wellies. And I'm going, okay, did they buy them over there? Okay, wellies is only going to be $12 or $14. But when you go to Iceland, you go to the Faroes, they could be $30, $40, $50, $60 because people need them and they're in demand. I mean, we know these places are expensive. So you're going to pay $100 for these things and they serve you better. They're easier to travel. They're like, man, they sounded great to me. I mean, when Nick was saying that he was stood in ice and he didn't feel a thing, like, I mean, that's just incredible, you know?
That's the way I feel now, my dry suit when I'm in the water.
Of course, because a dry suit versus a wetsuit in Ireland is absolutely outrageous versus, that's not too bad, like.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have a 4 mil dry suit that I go scuba diving every time. Now, don't get me wrong, it says it's a dry suit, but look, it leaks every now and again. It's because I have a skinny neck, the neck seal isn't exactly the best, so I have to get it changed.
Oh, that would be cold going down the neck.
Oh, no, it has happened two occasions. It has happened me on two. And do you know what's even funnier? A mate of mine, a dive buddy of mine, John Maloney. He's such a funny guy, right? At first, when I first met him, I thought, Jesus, this guy's a bit dry. Like, he's a bit odd. Like.
Does he listen?
But lo and behold, after a few weeks.
John, you're about to hear it.
He probably isn't listening. But if he does listen, great. But he's so funny. He is so witty. And he just comes out with these random remarks. But anyway, getting totally off topic. But anyway, we were on a dive there one day, right? He obviously didn't do his fucking buddy check with his friend, his dive buddy, and he never zipped up his dry suit. Into the water, he went, all the water straight down into his suit, into his back. And and it was cold out, man. It was freezing out that day. Yeah, and what did he do? He blamed his son. He's like, he was talking to me. I didn't concentrate properly. I was like, oh, yeah, it's your son's fault. Yeah. Oh, man. That was very funny that day.
He was lucky.
Yeah, he was.
What's the VSP for this week?
All right. So we've been talking about Sigma at the first part of the podcast. And you put up our Sunday showcase this week. And I put up a picture of a wedding that I did. And I took a picture of one of my grooms. And he's getting ready with a bit of window lighting. And I used it with the Sigma Art 1.5mm 1.4 DGHSM art lens. And it is absolutely, hands down, the best photography lens that I have ever owned. Hands down.
Ever.
And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to read out the description that's written below it on Whelan's cameras. This is an outstanding wide aperture mid telephoto performance with 1.4 brightness at the maximum aperture. This lens incorporates 17 optical elements in 12 groups, an uncommonly large number of elements for a prime lens, by including 3 FLD glass elements, 2 SLD glass elements and 1 aspherical lens element. The optical system minimizes axial chromatic aberration to deliver extremely high resolution along with ample peripheral light volume. Like Sigma's sport line lenses, the 1.5 1.4 art features a highly effective dust and splash proof structure with special sealing at the mount connection, manual focus ring, cover connection and other areas, allowing photographers to work in all types of weather. In addition, the front of the lens is protected by a water and oil repellent coating that makes cleaning easy. Instead of the conventional ABS plastic, the exclusive lens hood features an CFRP carbon fiber reinforced plastic, a light but strong material used on the interior and exterior fittings of aircraft. The removable ArcaSwiss tripod socket is compatible with the ArcaSwiss platform and clamps, and its exclusive protective cover makes the lens easier to carry and use while shooting handheld. So what you think of that, buddy?
Mother of God, that's the longest thing you've ever read in the history of anything we've done on this podcast. I'm halfway through and I go, what's he talking about? It was a lens, wasn't it? Okay, hang on, it was a Sigma lens. Okay, what was the lens?
Sounded like an airplane.
What was the lens he was talking about? Okay, hang on a second. Okay, 1.2. No, it wasn't. It was 1.4. No, it was an arch. Okay. Give me this in a nutshell, like, you know what I mean? Why is the lens your VSP?
The lens is my VSP simply because it is so good. It is so sharp. It's like, think of it this way. If the 85mm 1.4 and the 135mm 1.4 or 1.8 hooked up, had a funky night together and had a baby, this is what came out. The Sigma Art 105mm 1.4. I mean, this thing is an absolute beast. It looks menacing. It looks awesome. And it performs better than any lens I have ever owned. And it's just, it's just so freaking cool, man. It genuinely is. It looks like a rocket launcher.
So cool, it even has its own nickname, doesn't it?
The Bokeh Monster.
Yeah. I mean, look, to be fair, I have seen the pictures and the images that you've taken with the lens, and they are cracking. I mean, it does look like a phenomenal lens, and it does not only look like from the outside a phenomenal lens, but the quality of the images that you're able to get from it as well are outstanding. Yeah, I mean, how much is a lens, like, when you think in regards to the importance of, from your point of view, within a wedding shoot? I mean, look, you know, you're saying there you took a photograph. Would you be able to get that photograph with another lens, or does that give you something unique?
You're going to get quite close to it with the 85 1.4, but you're not going to get the same bokeh that you're going to get with this Sigma Art. Hence why it's called the Bokeh Monster. But I'd love to see a comparison between the two of them to see, like, you know, DxO do all these reports all the time, and the Sigma Art 1.4 85mm is one of the sharpest lenses that they've ever tested. So I'd like to see this lens put up on the DxO. And look, I've been really busy this week, so I should have looked for a bit of research before I put it up as the VSP. But in my head, whether it's got a fantastic rating or not, it's going to be my VSP, because I will say it right now, like I've said it twice already, this is the best lens I've ever owned. And I buy and I sell a lot of lenses because I kind of get sick of things from time to time. But I guarantee you, Darren, if you come back to me in 5 years' time, I will probably still have this lens on my shelf and I'll be using it on a weekly basis.
Interesting that it has captured you, I suppose, in that much too, and that you not only think it's going to change you from now, but it'll still be there in your arsenal of Sigma lenses that you currently have and probably will have by the time it arrives to the next iterations in 5 years. So all the ones that you have up there, you can wave bye-bye to them, because you're all going to be sold soon enough anyway when he moves over to the mirrorless versions that we featured in earlier on, yeah?
Well, lo and behold, I'm half tempted to sell the 85mm 1.4 because this, I haven't used 85 since I bought this.
Wow.
You know, I'm going to keep it for now, because once I sell it, I'll probably miss it, because I love that lens as well. And it's not a knock-in 85mm lens. It's absolutely beautiful and it's lightweight. The one downside to the 105 is it is quite heavy. You have to be careful of it, because it does come in at 1,645 grams.
Well, actually, you know what, that's interesting. Now, when we think back in regards to the segment on Sigma and releasing all those lenses, how heavy will they be? And the whole idea of going from a mirrorless camera is to reduce weight. So actually, that's a very good point. Is it going to be a fulcrum in regards to how successful they are moving to mirrorless based on the weight that they have? Because as we know, Sigma lenses aren't known for being any way light. They have got a fair old chunk to them. So if you look at an Olympus user who's mirrorless, they're going for a light camera. They're also going for incredibly light lenses in comparison to the weight and the others.
Interesting. Like I say, moving forward. Now, I don't use it on my 5D Mark III. I have, but I don't like it because it is that extra bit heavy. So I tend to use that lens with my ESR.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose you are saving some bit of weight, but, you know, again, at the end of the day, if you're having to lose weight in the body to compromise the weight of the lens, then ultimately, if the weight is the same weight, then you're not saving anything, I suppose, in weight. But at the same point, I don't think you're going to move to the US or anywhere for the weight saving point of it. I think you moved to it for many, many, many other reasons.
Correct. So we're going to end with the price point on this, and you can get this in Whelan's Cameras, Conn's Cameras, Barker Photographic, and any good retailers in the country of Ireland, and it's going to come in around the same price point of €1,449, and you can get them on a Canon fit, Nikon fit, and a Sony fit. So yeah, get onto your retailers and start buying this lens, guys, because this is an absolute banger of a VSP this week. What say you, Spoonley?
I think you like that one, actually. I haven't seen you get that excited. Just hang on, I gotta think back now to when's the last time I saw you get that excited. Oh, no. Maybe, actually, yeah, when you realise that we had Nick coming on the podcast then last week.
All right, so, Spoonley, it's been an absolute joy talking to you this week. I've been feeling really upbeat and, Can't wait for next week, man.
All right, man. Yeah, listen. Thanks a million. Good topics, boy. And thanks for everyone, as always, for listening. And from me, Shlonga Fall.
Ayo.
If you've enjoyed the Irish Photography Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, guys, keep shooting.